Today was D-Day for Donald Trump to leave the White House to accommodate the incoming U.S. administration. World leaders have mentioned that they look forward to the transfer of power. But just what does that power look like under Joe Biden's leadership? And what does it mean for the rest of the globe? John Stremlau from Wits University's International Relations Department joins us on the line now for more of the detail and some analysis. Thanks so much, John, for your time this evening. So we've finally got Joe Biden being sworn in today as the 46th president of the United States. Not as much fanfare given the pandemic conditions. Also, sans former President Trump in attendance. And the expectation is that there will be enough of a guarding against any January the 6th kind of disruptions to proceedings. What in particular do you have your eye on this evening?
I think that was a very good intro because this is an extraordinary inauguration given the pandemic and given Trump's non-attendance, which hasn't happened since 1869 when Andrew Johnson boycotted Ulysses Grant's inauguration. But at the same time, you have a continuity here with the oath, the 35-word oath being said every 4 years since George Washington did the first one in 1789. So there is a degree of continuity. The real challenges in coming to terms with the Trump era, however, is to put the country back together on a more stable basis. And I think what Biden has to prove is that he can be a more leader in delivering to the American people what they're most concerned about, which is a death rate of COVID, which is 20% of the world's death rate, but only 4% of the population. So he has got to roll out a national plan for getting vaccines into people's arms quickly, and he's promised to do that. But he also has to revive the economy and, in the meanwhile, deal with the injustice of racial injustice, the legacy of that, and then climate change. And those four packages that are interrelated are explicit in the various plans he's putting forward, and he'll do 17 executive actions later today that will deal with things that are of concern to Africa, such as immigration and rejoining WHO and rejoining Paris Climate Change Club. So I think that he's going to be off to a very rapid start, and it will not have the traditional pomp and circumstance of a normal inauguration with parades and the like, but it will get down to business very quickly.
Okay, so that's some of what we should be anticipating, of course, as he outlines a bit of his plan to build back better. Are the new plans to, combat the economic blight that has been triggered by lockdowns, John, realistic or a little bit too ambitious in your books?
Well, that's a very good question because a lot will depend on what the Congress appropriates. He can only do so much with executive actions, and he will do things which will be very reassuring to international partners and critics alike, at least with regard to immigration and the Muslim ban, for example, and the other things that I mentioned. But the big ticket number is this relief and recovery immediate bill that he wants to table for $1.9 trillion that would get the economy back on its feet a bit better. And I think he just might make that. Meanwhile, of course, there is the impeachment of Donald Trump and the likelihood of a trial in the Senate, which has to be done simultaneously and can't distract from the very ambitious program that he has laid out for everyone to see and that it'll be measured on. So the next 100 days really are going to be very important, and I would hope that African governments will pay close attention because there are aspects I've analyzed in each of these initiatives that would have knock-on effects that could be very positive for Africa, in my view.
We'll get to that in a bit. Before we bring things into the global fray, John, just taking a look at the internal politics at play stateside, there's somewhat of an expectation in the commentary that we have been seeing up to this point that he's going to be crossing party lines to ease what has been a pretty embittered internal political estrangement. Do you see that? Do you see him getting that right?
Well, it's going to be extremely difficult because you've got a very fractured and uncertain Republican Party. What is intriguing about the horrible events 2 weeks ago is that the legislators were all locked down in the Capitol when that mob that Trump inspired and incited attacked the Capitol. So Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republicans, has opened the door to possibly voting, and he would need Biden would need 17 votes from the Republicans to support the conviction of Donald Trump. If Donald Trump was convicted, that means he could not serve ever again in public office, and that would be out of the running for 2024, which would serve the Republican establishment right now probably pretty well, even though there are the residual 27-30% of the American voters that are dyed-in-the-wool Trumpists and believe the big lie and called the Stop the Steal. But that's got also very real racial undertones, and it's part of the transformation which is going on in the United States simultaneously with all this.
Yeah.
So Biden has to navigate that. But, you know, he's an experienced legislator, and he will look for practical solutions for important problems and build some momentum, because he's looking at 2022, the by-election, very carefully, because he wants to increase the Democratic majority in the House and the Senate. So it's going to be exciting times.
Exactly. I came across a comment today saying that he's far more a disciplined politician than he was for much of his career at this stage. John, so off the bat, and given the COVID distraction that, the globe is having to deal with, what do African countries have to do to leverage off that possible opportunity that you, alluded to when it comes to this shift in administration now?
Well, one of the ironies is that the Trump administration neglected Africa, or at least Trump did himself, but programs continued that enjoyed bipartisan support, like Power Africa, Feed the Future, the AGOA, which is going to have to be renegotiated in 2025, of course, for trade. And the big deal was that Trump did pass the Build Act, the Trump administration, with congressional support, that increased, doubled the money for the Development Finance Corporation, so that there is the infrastructure for pushing ahead. The bigger question that is at the heart of the Biden administration and policy is that the democracy and human rights component, African leaders have committed themselves to having periodic elections, but African autocracy is on the rise and illiberalism is on the rise. So a country like South Africa should be a very good partner for the United States if it serves South African interests and if it is in the context of pushing for those norms to take hold at the regional and continental level in Africa, along with the African Continental Free Trade area that is so promising. There is going to be a lot of creative energy, and I'm very, very glad that he's putting real professionals with experience in place already at state and in the intelligence communities and at defense, but also in the finance and economic ministries. And the economics of all this, with the big spending and with Janet Yellen and Treasury, should bode well for cooperation with Africa, I think.
On that optimistic note, let's leave it there. John, thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. John Stremlau is from Wits University's International Relations Department.